Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, you're listening to Just Films and That. This is the podcast where we talk about those films that we think deserve just a little bit more love. Whether it be underrated or underseen, we're going to talk about it. So this week, it's Dragonheart from 1996. So let's see what we think. Alice.
Yes.
Dragonheart, then.
Dragonheart, Josh.
It's from 1996, isn't it?
Indeed.
So, you chose this one then. So, tell the lovely people, and they are all lovely, listening at home, what is Dragonheart about, and why did you pick Dragonheart in terms of the podcast that we're recording right now?
So, we're in England in the 10th century, and alas, the prince has been fatally wounded. So his mom, the queen, takes him to the local dragon and begs him to help save her son's life. So he agrees and gives the prince half of his heart, which binds them together. And if one of them dies, they both die. The dragon asks in return that the prince rules with honour and integrity. But that doesn't really happen, and he turns out to be a bit of a knobhead. But the local heartthrob and knight, Sir Bowen, who was very close to the prince when he was young, believes that the dragon's heart has corrupted the now king and seeks vengeance by hunting him down. But hang on, turns out the dragon is actually pretty cool and they become best buds. And that's what it's about in a nutshell. Why did I pick it? Initially, I thought this might be underrated. So
right, okay.
I see this a couple of times when I was a kid.
Mm.
And similar to things like All Dogs Go to Heaven,
yeah,
or The Whole Nine Yards, I didn't actually remember much about the film.
Oh, right,
I just remembered the memory of enjoying it. And I remembered feeling very emotional when, spoiler warning listeners, when the dragon dies at the end. So I thought, right, have a little look. Have a little look at the critical reception. I do think it's a bit underrated. And I am wondering if it is underseen in terms of like these 90s sort of fantasy family films, these like action adventure films. I'm wondering how many people now are going back to watch it.
Yeah, are people checking it out now on a family film night or whatever?
The only thing I will say that maybe counter argues that is that there's loads of sequels.
There's many
sequels.
That was news to me.
Yeah,
when
same.
I typed it into my streaming service.
So that was weird. But
you love
so
a film.
Still...
You love a film with random sequels that are still going on. This is your at least your third one.
Yeah,
Tremors
is one that comes
still
to
being
mind.
Named today. Sequels. Yeah. Deep Blue Sea, still getting more more juice out of that fruit of smart mega sharks. And now, how many films are in the Dragonheart franchise in which it's about half a dragon's heart? Like, what? Do you know what I mean? Like, and who's watching them? I mean, maybe it did better than we thought box office wise, and that's why.
So box office wise, it's definitely not underseen. Like box office wise, it was considered sort of a success. I believe it cost about £57 million, and it made like £115 million. So
that's pretty
it
good.
Got sort of double its budget back.
Yeah.
So certainly not a box office flop. But I just. So yeah, maybe I'm wrong about the underseen. You know, it's because no one ever talks about it.
So with it being, with you picking it there and what you said there, then why did you put it on your list? So obviously you'd said you hadn't seen it for a bit. You're not sure if it's underrated, not sure if it's underseen, but you think it's underrated. But what made you go, I'm going to put Dragonheart on my list?
It was the critics score
on
Rotten Tomatoes that I'll tell you all about later.
Okay.
But that was the main reason.
And what made it come into your head?
Oh my goodness.
Like what, because I know films that I'm like, that oh, I perhaps will be scrolling through a streaming platform to find something. And I'm like, oh shit, yeah, that I'll see how it did. Or it might be on telly. Or there's ones that just pop into my head. I mean, is this just a head popper in a...
I think, so I do have periods of time where I sort of try and really have a think about films that I've seen as a kid that I haven't seen in a long while that could potentially go on the list.
You do and that, don't you?
Yeah, and I and ones that I just kind of want to revisit. Because like I say, this is at least the third one now where I didn't fully remember, you know, the plot, the concept, the characters and all that. So I'm kind of intrigued as well because I'm like, oh, I want to go back. And you know what I do find fun about doing this podcast as well is when I'm wrong and when I think that something might be underrated, I watch it and I'm like, oh, no, this was a bad idea.
40 days and 40 nights.
Enjoy that. Exactly. So I enjoyed that. Had you seen this one before?
So I definitely seen it before. I think, and I don't know if I've sort of Inception myself, I think I saw it at the cinema.
Oh, wow. Cool.
But 1996, I would have been 5 or 6. And not too young, but perhaps a little too young to be seeing something like this at the cinema. But I've definitely seen it before. I think it was the cinema, but I can't remember fully. But yeah, I've definitely seen it before. And like you, I didn't fully remember the plot. So my recollection was half a dragon's heart, half a king's heart. King's a bit of a bastard, but to kill the king, you got to kill the dragon. And it's all very sad. And Dennis Quaid's there with his long, brilliant hair. And he looks like Aragorn before Aragorn. Well, the film's made anyway. But you know what I mean? That's all I remember. I did not remember things like that. They teamed up or anything like that. So I was interested to watch it again because the other thing I remember is being really sad. At the end, which you know, I think a lot of people of our generation, if they have seen it, I think this is there with like your likes of your Incredible Journey, Homeward Bound, you know, that sort of thing of like, oh my God, I just cried so much when I was a kid. So I had seen it before, but I was interested. I've not seen it for, you know, since I was an adult, basically, as far as I can remember. So I was interested to watching again, and again, quite trepidatious with that idea of something from the 90s. Oh, God, is this going to be... Especially because you know it's quite CGI heavy as well. You know, that sort of thing. You think, am I going to go into an absolute mess here? But anyway, let's see. Let's see what we did go into. What did you think watching it again?
So... It was a bit of a slow burn, but I did actually come to really enjoy myself. But it took me a little while to get there, I'm not going to lie. So, like, the first maybe 20 minutes, I was like, ugh. You know, the script maybe not so good. Some of the performances. Clunky is a good word to describe how I felt about it.
If I was to draw a graph of, because I feel exactly the same.
That's interesting. Yeah.
So if I was to draw a graph for you of enjoyment of this film versus how much Draco is in it, how strong do we think it is in Draco being in its favour? Because I would say pretty damn strong.
Huge, enormous.
It's like right up in it. It's like,
yeah, we're spiking
not
up
asked,
there.
Where's the dragon? Where's the dragon, mate? Where's the dragon?
The dragon?
Come on, where's the dragon, mate?
Get out of the cave.
Oh, there's the dragon. Okay, here we go. Enjoying it now.
Yeah. And maybe that was it. Because a lot of it for me, and I'll get into this very shortly, but it's the relationship between Draco and Bowen. So Dennis Quaid's character, they've got a great relationship and it develops really nicely. But like I said, I'll get into that very shortly. So I think the main thing that really stands out about this film is the quality of the dragon. So all the CGI around the dragon feels so advanced for the mid-90s. And I did read that the visual effects were nominated for an Oscar in both 96 and in 1997, but missed out ultimately.
Just that good.
Well, so is that a thing? You can be nominated for 2 years?
I am not an expert on that sort of stuff. No. I would say... I've never heard of that before, but then maybe it's changed or whatever. Yeah, I've never heard of someone being nominated. Obviously, I've heard people being nominated back to back because Tom Hanks won back to back for Philadelphia, then Forrest Gump, or you know, you got other stuff that has definitely happened. But I've never heard of the same thing winning. Heard of that before.
Didn't win, sadly. They're just nominated.
Sorry, yeah, being nominated, yeah, I suppose, yeah.
So in 96, it lost out to Babe, and then in 97, it missed out to Independence Day. So you can sort of see why. Like, that's tough competition, isn't it?
Yeah, Yeah, I suppose that's sort of fair enough.
So I get that. So I learned something new, that a film can be nominated for the same thing, or that, yeah, like that the film can even be nominated 2 years in a row. So there we go. If anyone has any more information about why that's possible and any other instances that that's happened, please get in touch, because I had no idea that was a thing. So The Dragon is obviously a huge draw, and like you've just sort of articulated it really well. When he's on screen, the film is just a bit better and a bit more engaging. And I do love the relationship between him and Dennis Quaid's character, Bowen. So they start off as enemies, and then they embark on like this kind of symbiotic relationship that benefits them both. And then as the film goes on, they share quite a few like quite tender moments as their friendship strengthens, and you discover some of the lore around Draco and the dragons in this world in general. And it's like, yeah, who wouldn't want to be mates with a dragon, right? Mm. And I would probably say that the journey that they both go on together is one of the more compelling aspects of the film.
First 20 minutes, just not bothered. It's slow, yeah, funny, it's clunky, yeah. They're showing you stuff you're not bothered about.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because it's called Dragonheart, right? So I'm not being too basic to say you're going into it being like, give me some dragons.
Where's the dragon?
Where's the dragons, mate? There's a dragon, mate. Come on. So, you know, when you're seeing Dennis Quaid, the whole bit of Aeon the King getting hurt at the beginning just drags on and drags on. That could be over in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we were messing about. There's an uprising and he got hurt in an accident.
Yeah,
and it just goes on and on and on and on.
That is exactly what Ollie said.
I'm just
when he
like,
was watching it. He was like, that could have been a 2 minute scene.
Yeah, it could have,
I didn't need all that.
It didn't need
thing,
half an
so,
hour,
yeah.
20 minutes of, oh, and mm-hmm. they just sort of, and I get it, you know, you're trying to build up the relationship between Aeon and Bowen and that sort of, because he's his teacher. But there's all sorts of, you know, I'll come on to this in the dislikes, so there's all sorts of real exposition issues where there's too much exposition there and not enough exposition about what is going on in other senses. Like, I would much rather know about the Knight's Code and the dragon's sort of lore than whether or not Aeon is any good with a sword and whether or not the girl at the beginning's dad gets blinded and all that, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's just unnecessary. So it's almost a little bit clunky and a little bit sort of weirdly structured in that sense. But no, as soon as the dragon comes on, I obviously remember Sean Connery was the voice of Draco, and he's perfect. Like he's got such an iconic voice. He's got such an iconic voice in general. And I did go into it thinking, yeah, dragon voice by Sean Connery. I wonder how that would go down now. And it just fits. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't really explain it. It just fits really, really well. But yeah, so it's all about that relationship in it. That whole, you know, there's a great little bits of back and forth between them. As I say, I completely forgot that they essentially become con men and start conning people out of bags of gold by convincing them that he's killing dragons for them. Yeah, the CGI as well. They use him sparingly, but when he's on screen, he looks really good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit like, I don't know, obviously the benchmark for that sort of thing is like your T2 and whatever the Robert Patrick is in T Terminator 2, the liquid one.
T-1000.
Yeah, that one, the liquid one. But obviously he is used sparingly, but when he is used, you're like, oh, that looks good.
Oh, it looks great. Oh, it looks great.
I mean, some of the bits of Draco in this look better than some of the CGI in some of the films I've seen this year.
It's exceptionally good.
I was really
surprised. Mm. Like, I was expecting it to be, well, similar two things like Deep Blue Sea sort of thing.
Scorpion King
and
the Mummy Returns or whatever.
Yeah, and you're just imagining these guys on like these ancient computers putting it all together. But it's top quality stuff, man.
Yeah.
It's really good. So I was so pleased with that. I actually think that some of the performances in this are quite strong as well. So I do feel like Dennis Quaid is doing the best he can with what he has, right? Like, it certainly feels like he's being directed to be more melodramatic and to really amp things up a lot. And the script isn't always the most sophisticated or compelling, but I do feel like he's making the best of it. But I really enjoy Pete Postlethwaite and David,
David Thewlis.
So Pete Postlethwaite is playing, so I think it's a monk or like some sort of
brother.
Religious...
Is it Brother Gilbert?
Yes, sort of religious figure, but then he's also an aspiring poet. So he gives off like real bard energy, especially when he's around Bowen, and I really enjoyed their dynamic. And then David plays, so Kit is, it's, you were saying, what were you saying? Aeon, is it Aenon?
I think it's called Aeon or Aeon.
King Aenon, apologies, but basically the king. And he is just a real slimy, horrible bastard, and he does it so well.
So good, isn't he?
Like, He's, oh, because you hate him.
Absolute
like you
shit
hate
eating
him
grin on his
so
face
much.
All the way through it.
Yeah.
And he uses his accent as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
And there's a lot of accents going on in this film, which might come up on again in a bit. But the fact that you've got David, you know, David Thewlis just being a northern king, yeah. just like in, yeah, I mean, he wasn't in it as much as I remember him being in it. I thought he was in it loads more. But when he is in it, it's got big Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves energy, this film.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's almost out of that sort of template in it. It's more fantastical because obviously there's no dragons or elements of fantasy in Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, apart from Kevin Costner's accent and hair. But in this, they've almost gone, right, we need medieval. You know, we need a hero who's gruff, but also just a leader, just a standard leading man. You know, spicy sort of leading lady who, you know, gives as good as she gets and that sort of thing. Isn't just your standard damsel in distress type character, and we need a proper scenery chewing bad guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's what you get in it.
And that's exactly what he is. He's so cartoony, he's so over the top, and you are just rooting for his downfall. Obviously, it's just sad that, for you know, he dies and then ultimately the dragon has to die. And just finally, I just kind of felt it was a lot of fun in general. Like, I found some of it really quite funny. Some of the conversations between the characters were quite amusing. They were quite sarcastic at times. And I just ultimately, in the end, found the whole thing really to enjoy. Like I said, got off to a bit of a slow start and I wasn't sure. And I was like, oh, crumbs, am I going to go into this with nothing to like about it? But it definitely gets better as it goes on.
It does.
And
it does.
That reinforced my opinion that I do think it's underrated, and ultimately I was really pleased with how it went down.
Okay, so we'll move on to things that we perhaps didn't like about Dragonheart, or that we change about Dragonheart. Alice, why did he have to die? What?
Oh,
why is he at the end? It's just sorry. Oh,
it's
sorry.
Sad. It's sad.
It's well said. But you know, does he have to die?
Yeah, of course he does. That's part, of the threat, right? He does have to.
Right.
He does have
Why?
To,
Why does he have
sure.
to die?
Because the king has to die.
Why don't they just keep the king prisoner?
Because he's too dastardly and horrible, and he must die.
Too ginger.
It's all bad. It's all bad. So I totally get it. He has to have it. But yes.
What didn't you like about it? I'm sensing there's things. I'm sensing you've got dragon points.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's a few things. There's three things in total. So some of it, and I don't want this to sound mean or anything, but some of it felt like a little bit cheap. So like I said, I think the budget for this was around £57 million, and it's pretty clear that most of this probably went on the dragon. So when you look at things like the costume and the set design, there's just something very basic about it all. Like the costumes all look like they've been pulled from some Andram club from down the road. And I found a lot of the time that the sets and the structures were lacking character and conviction, and there just didn't feel like there was much to it all. Now, obviously, the landscape itself was gorgeous, and I think there are some genuine like castle or fort ruins in there, which we do get a bit of. But for everything that was constructed, it just felt like it was lacking attention to detail and authenticity. And I just felt really aware that I was looking at a set.
It feels a little bit like it's set in one square mile.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
there's one castle, another village, a second village, and a bit of forest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's set. It's like set in like a computer game. Where you can only see what you can see on the screen.
Really restricted. It did feel really restricted.
I agree with that. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and the costume thing, I just really noticed. Like, some of it was just so, I don't know, like you would expect to see it in a really sort of low budget, like indie, like or maybe even a student-y type like film sort of thing.
A Macbeth. Yeah, some sort of like, showing of Macbeth or something like that.
So that was a little bit disappointing. I do think as well, it is perhaps a little bit confused in understanding who the audience is or who the perceived target audience is, because you've got the talking dragon and the magical elements, which feel like they're really directed at a younger audience. And then the story and the plot points themselves do feel quite basic and easy to understand. But then there's some fairly violent scenes in this. And I think most of the jokes are a little bit more directed at perhaps older kids or even adults. So I was a bit unsure at times of who the filmmakers thought this was for, or if maybe they just kind of got carried away with the big, flashy, expensive dragon, and so all the other aspects of the film just weren't as perfected, so it left it feeling a little bit muddled.
I definitely agree with that. Yeah, definitely. It's that whole thing again of who's this for. So you've got the funny dragon and the back and forth, but then at one point when they kill the king that's Aeon's dad, it's like they absolutely batter him.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's quite grim. And you don't see, you know, swords going in, but it's implied violence. It's quite like, oh shit, like that's, he's been absolutely crucified there. That he's not coming back from that sort of thing. Yeah. So yeah, it is quite gruesome. It is quite scary in places and stuff like that. You know, you've got one character, the king, who blinds someone else as a means of punishment and stuff like that. So I definitely agree with that. Yeah. Anything else?
So just finally, and you touched on it, funnily enough, there at the very beginning, but the way that Draco dies. So I found it a little bit too abrupt, to be honest. Like, I'm not too sure what I was expecting or what I wanted, but it felt like it all just happened a bit too quickly and without ceremony. And I sort of wanted more, I think because I remembered feeling so emotional about it as a kid, I kind of wanted that feeling again as an adult. But it all happened so quickly that you don't really... I didn't really feel it this time, but it's nice sort of once he has died and it's like his soul or whatever it is goes up to the stars and joins that nice, dragon constellation. So that's all very cute, but it just felt like it happened too quickly.
I thought that. I was like, I don't remember it being like, shit, you have to kill me.
Yeah, no,
all right, okay.
Now you're dead.
I'll crack on then. Sorry. All right. Any last words? No? Okay. See you in a bit, mate.
Yeah, it is a bit, and also,
I'm sticking to this, he doesn't have to die.
Do you think?
Just keep the king in prison then. If he's such a prick, just lock him in the tower and then tell everyone, oh, king's dead.
But he kind of wants to die. Like
Draco
does.
Yeah, maybe there's that element
of it. He's the last one.
That's true, he's
dragon.
Sort of completely on his own.
Yeah.
In terms of his species. So I'll take that.
Yeah. Good. Was there anything else for you that you didn't like or that you change?
I've got a few bits that I didn't like, and I've got a sort of suggestion of how to fix it.
Mm-hmm. That's
a lot of mine's really sort of nitpicky, but I found that a lot of plot holes and issues and, like I say, little nitpicks around exposition. So it's a bit style of over substance. I touched on it earlier. We spend a lot of time in the first 20 minutes dealing with stuff we don't need to deal with. And then some poor exposition in that bit where they're focusing on the wrong thing leads to emotional beats not have an impact. So it keeps referring to Bowen adhering to the Arthurian Knight's Code. Right, King Arthur and his knights had this code, and it's all this. but you never get introduced to what that is. He just says it and drops it into conversation, whereas I think what you need is to have that clearer. If that's the rules that he lives by, I think you need to make that clear. And I don't, maybe the way I'm looking at it is a little bit spoon-feedy, but I'm thinking about this as a fantasy adventure family film where you really need to establish the rules of the world a little bit better rather than focusing on a villager uprising and stuff like that. So, yeah, did feel a little bit clunky from exposition-wise. Listen, it is mainly a family film, and I do think kids would like it. And I think kids now would probably like it as well, if I'm being honest. But there's other little things. And, you know, it's one of those things, when you pull on the thread and you start seeing stuff, you start being like, well, what about this? Well, what about this? Mm-hmm. So it's like, why doesn't Draco just tell him that he's the dragon who saved the king, you know, earlier? Why doesn't Bowen know that Draco is the dragon? He's got a really distinctive voice. Or do all dragons sound like Sean Connery?
Yeah, they're all like,
do you know
that.
What I mean? Are they all walking around, hello, I'm a dragon. Yes, I'm also a dragon. It's like, is it like that? Why does he care about Aeon so much when he's a little boy? He's a little shit. And then that led me into things like when Bowen, again, very Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, trains the villagers to rise up against the king. Fucking hell, they get way too good too quickly. They're like fully competent soldiers in a couple of days and taking on trained guards of the king or whatever. They'd have no chance. And then that led me to things like, you know, when you're watching fight scenes in films and there's an element of like, I should just suspend my disbelief. But towards the end, Bowen's fighting two people with two broadswords. And they're looking at it like and going, have you ever picked one of them up? They are so heavy. Do you know what I mean?
He's tough, man.
They're a two-handed weapon. They're a two-handed weapon. Like he should, anyway. So I got on my horse a little bit around that. So, but my main point is there's some real clunky exposition. I want to know more about what goes on with the dragons. Why are the dragons all so noble? And like, you know, is it in a good way? I want to know more about it. I want to know more about Draco and why would you just give your half of your heart to this little boy who's going to be the king and stuff like that? Yeah. Is it like are they like a noble species who are always helping people out and they're misunderstood and hunted? And again, I wanted to know more about Bowen and his Arthurian code as well. And I didn't want to know about like the guy getting blinded and the little, you know, and the king and all that. Mm-hmm. All you really need to know in that first scene is that the king gets injured. Mm-hmm. And that's why he has to get his heart. That's it. So I didn't need any of that, but I did want more from it. So it's not even like it's too long. It's like an hour and 45, right? Mm-hmm. But you do really feel the pace in that first 20 minutes. And I think if you just change things around, how I would change it is obviously cut it down, get rid of the stuff that we've mentioned that we've, you know, and we've both said that, right? We both said we don't want that stuff in it. Whereas I would probably have, because at the end, Pete Postlethwaite narrates at the end, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. And he sort of says he went up to the stars. Well, I'd have it starting with that narration as well. So have it with Pete Postlethwaite as the monk is telling you the story, because obviously he's a scribe. So he's going along and writing the story as the monk, a little bit like what Paul Bettany does in A Knight's Tale. Mm-hmm. And he's telling you the story as if like he's telling you from beyond the grave, or he's telling you as this almost omnipotent voice or whatever. And then have it, you know, he's one of the Arthurian knights. So obviously he's not meant to be an Arthurian knight like Percival and Galahad and Lancelot, but he's meant to be a like descendant, or he's meant to follow that. So have him being like, these are King Arthur's knights, you know, that real epic narration. These are the rules by which they led by, you know, my blade is there to help the weak and all that, you know, all that stuff. And just scrap the other stuff and just have him training him. Then he gets hurt. Bang. That's it. Mm-hmm. That's all you need to know. But by bookending it, I think you give it an even more fantastical feel and an even more, you know, like you're reading a fairy tale type feel. That's how I'd change it. Would that improve it for you? Or is it spoon-feeding too much?
No, 100%. It might be spoon-feeding a little bit, but that stuff is more interesting than what we do get is the problem, and that is a better alternative. So, totally agree.
Okay, so we'll move on to talk about the critical reception in a moment. But before that, Alice, I believe you're going to take us on a journey.
I am indeed, Josh. Strap in, and you two listeners, because we're going to go down the rabbit hole for this segment that I'm going to call Alice Down the Rabbit Hole. So, For this edition of Alice Down the Rabbit Hole, let's take a closer look at the life and career of the actor who plays young Prince Aon, Lee Oakes. Lee was born in 1974 in Cheshire, here in England, and Dragonheart was his first experience of the screen before embarking on a career that mostly focused on television. And like many British actors, he's appeared in all the classics, Heartbeat, Holby City, Coronation Street, but perhaps most iconically, Two Pints of Lager and A Packet of Crisps, where he played Munch. Interestingly, Dragonheart director Rob Cohen obviously saw something in Oakes, as he also appeared in Daylight, which is another of Cohen's films, where he played Gem Thief Number 3, which, though not critically very well received, does star Sylvester Stallone and Viggo Mortensen. But I hear you cry, who played Gem Thief Number 1 and Number 2? Well, I won't keep you in suspense any longer. As Gem Thief Number 1, we've got Mark Chadwick, who was a stunt performer in Speed 2 Cruise Control, and Gem Thief Number 2 is Candice Miller, who literally only ever did one film, so she remains a little bit of a mystery. As for Oakes, well, it doesn't look like his career really took off in any sort of significant way, with his last IMDb credit being from 2011, but shortly after his role in Dragonheart, his parents apparently won the lottery, so hopefully he's been able to enjoy a comfortable and fulfilling life. And that was Alice Down the Rabbit Hole.
Alice Down the Dragon Hole, maybe?
Oh, that would have been better. Or the Dragon Cave.
Alice Down the Dragon Cave.
Keep it relevant.
Yeah, I did watch Two Pints of Lager and a Packet of Crisps when it was big when I was a kid, and thought it was really, really funny.
Yeah.
And listen, I will never discredit anyone's work. You like what you like, but I tried to watch it recently and found it largely not as funny as I used to find it.
Oh, no, 100%. Yeah, it's don't go back, not, Josh. Don't ruin the memory.
Don't ever go back. Don't look back. That's
no, it. Don't do it.
Don't look back in anger. Anyway, let's move on to talking about the critical reception then. Now, I haven't seen the critical reception. You've sort of said that you still think it's underrated. Now, we've talked about this film. It's been a very balanced episode. Some good, some bad. So how do I think it did? Ooh. I'm going to go right down the middle and say, overall, we're talking a middle five. Like a five and a half. That's what we've been saying. I would say that'd be a little bit underrated. I'd say this is thinking about who it's for, thinking about how it's aged, I'd say it's a 6 out of 10, maybe a high 5 out of 10.
Okay.
You know, there are issues with it, but it's definitely, I think, would still tick a box for younger kids and stuff who want to see like a little bit of fantasy adventure with a still fairly good dragon that holds up with the CGI. So, how did it do?
Okay, so at the time of recording on IMDb, it gets a 6.4, which I think is kind of where I would sit with it, to be honest. I think I'm with that IMDb score. Then over on Rotten Tomatoes, the audience give it 60%, and then the critics give it 50%. And it was that 50%, I saw that, that was like the main reason I chose it. I was like, that's a little bit harsh for me. It's not, I don't think it's drastically underrated, but I do think that a score of 50% does ignore some of the positives that are in there, and which there are many, as we've gone through. Can certainly see the flaws in it, but after watching it again this time and now doing the episode, I do think that that's underrated.
I'd agree. You know, what we've said there, it's not perfect, but I think there's plenty to like in there. There is some clunky exposition, but thinking about the target audience, would they like it and would they still like it? I think so. It's probably about what I think we both put it at a low to middle 6. I think I liked it a little bit less than you, but it's by no means 50% bad. So if the critics get the deciding vote, as we know they do, let's say it's underrated.
Yeah, I did it.
So there we go, another episode in the bag. Dragonheart is underrated, we think. But give it a watch and see what you think if you like 90s CGI dragons. In the meantime, we'll be back next week with another episode in your podcast feed, so keep an eye out for that. If you'd like to get in touch with us, it's filmsandthatpod@gmail.com. And we're on all the social medias. If you just search for Just Films and That on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, you'll find us. We're on all there. Always putting little bits of content out here and there, so heading over and give us a follow. We're on Patreon as well, so if you want a little bit of extra content, then head into the episode description notes for the very episode you're listening to and click the Patreon link, where for £1 a month you can get ad-free extended episodes a day early. Any support you can give us would be massively appreciated, but of course we just appreciate you listening to this, don't we, Alice?
We do, and very much.
We are also, Alice, on the television, aren't we?
We are indeed. Every Friday from 6 p.m. you can find us on the local TV network. So if you live in Birmingham, Bristol, Leeds, or Liverpool, or the northeast of England, you can find us on Channel 7 on Freeview. Or if you live in North Wales or South Wales, you can find us on Channel 8 on Freeview. And I'm also uploading all the videos onto Daily Motion. So if you head on over there and search for Just Films, and that will pop up and it will make your day so much better. That is an Alice Oliver guarantee. There you go.
High expectations there, Alice, that we... Yes. You're writing a check there, we might not be able to cash. But yes, thank you very much for listening. We'll see you next week. It's goodbye from me. Cheerio.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.